Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Lauren L. of the High Desert here. Thank you so much for tuning in. It is currently October 18, 2015. That's a Sunday, 3:30 p.m. Lauren L. of the High Desert is brought to you by Lauren L. Online Marketing. That is my personal online marketing services. I help businesses and individuals, all sizes, located anywhere, whether you're in the Morongo Basin, you're in the lower desert, or if you're on the other side of the United States. I help people and businesses with online marketing, social media, email outreach. I'm also a virtual assistant, so I answer emails. I do all kinds of services for people, and it's what help keeps this show going. So if you would like to know more about my services, please contact me at growwithlaurenl.com. You can also email growwithlaurenl@gmail.com. Also, Lauren L. of the High Desert is always open to sponsorship and advertising. If you would like to get your business or your event on my website, I do have options available for you to do so. I also have options available to promote you through social media, which is my expertise. If you would like to know more about how you can work with me and we can get promotion going for you, you can contact me directly through LaurenL.com. You can also email me at LaurenL.com. I really appreciate the outreach and the assistance. It helps keep this broadcast going, gives me more time to focus on information that all of you want to hear. I'm kicking off the show today with a piece of history. This is coming from the Morongo Basin 100-Year Project, 1910 to 2010. This is a book that you can actually purchase at the 29 Palms Old Schoolhouse in 29 Palms. And it's a great book with all kinds of little pieces of information about the Morongo Basin. So this particular story that I'm reading you is coming from the year 1939, and the article title is 29 Palms Post Office Burglaries. Here's what it says. The 29 Palms Post Office was opened on October 28, 1927, at the Gold Park Hotel. After several relocations, by the late 1930s, Bagley's Market on the Plaza was selected as the final location. On December 21, 1938, upon opening the post office, Postmaster Ben Sieg discovered there had been a break-in and that money order stamps and cash were missing. 6 months later, on June 29, 1939, again there had been a break-in. The post office had been entered in a similar manner as in the previous incident. Upon receiving claims for the burglaries, the U.S. Post Office Department decided the 29 Palms branch was responsible because it could not secure the building and the safe, even though the postmaster had previously asked for help in securing the safe. The Mosler Safe Company had manufactured the safe, which had been furnished by the U.S. Post Office Department. It should be noted that if given one spin to the left, the dials on the safe would open the safe. In 1940, John Frank Cooper was apprehended and charged in Oklahoma for the burglary. I can imagine there was quite a bit of burglaries out here, and it must have been really hard to track down the thieves. Interesting that they found someone in Oklahoma. Here are some upcoming events that may be of interest to you. Let me go through them very quickly. This can also be found on my website, LaurenL.com. So if you go there, just click on events and you can find everything that I'm sharing with you right now. On October 24th, there will be a native seed collecting and propagating workshop from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. This will be hosted by the Mojave Desert Land Trust. Here's some background information. Join us for a presentation and hands-on workshop led by Marina Wagner, Mojave Desert Land Trust Native Plants Intern and Master of Landscape Architecture Candidate specializing in California Desert Natives at Cal Poly Pomona. Ms. Wagner will give a presentation on collecting and cleaning seeds and germinating native desert plants. Topics include why native plants are important in the desert, how to spot mature seeds, and how to prepare seeds for storage and germination, and tips for growing healthy native plants. Hands-on seed cleaning activities will give volunteers experience working with a variety of native desert species. Don't forget to join us next month for our fall native plant market in partnership with Joshua Basin Water District and Joshua Tree National Park on Saturday, November 14th at the Mojave Desert Land Trust headquarters. Seating is limited. Please RSVP to Dawn Fraser. You can email her at Dawn, D-A-W-N, at MojaveDesertLandTrust.org. Please RSVP no later than October 22nd. Transition Joshua Tree will be holding a general membership meeting on November 1st starting at 5 p.m. This will be hosted by the water team. And it will also be taking place at the Yucca Mesa Community Center in Yucca Valley. There will be a potluck and food demonstration, team reports, important business. And the program is The Story of Water, presented by BCG's Marcia and Corey. Mark your calendar for this event. I've been to their events in the past, and they're some of my favorite events in the Morongo Basin. Anything that's hosted by Transition Joshua Tree has always been really educational, very fun, and I support what they do. There will be a field trip at the Joshua Tree Retreat Center. I know that we all hear about the Joshua Tree Retreat Center. There's usually something interesting going on there, and it's a great place to relax. But how many know the history behind the Joshua Tree Retreat Center or have toured the facilities? I've been there one time, and it was pretty interesting. So there will be a Joshua Tree Retreat Center field trip taking place November 4th, starting at 10 a.m. and goes to 12 p.m. It is hosted by the Morongo Basin Historical Society, and it is $10 for you to attend. Actually, $10 for members and $15 for non-members. Tour the grounds and some of the buildings, which is the largest collection of Lloyd Wright buildings in the world, led by Executive Director Victoria Gavoin. Learn about founder of the Institute of Mental Physics, John Dingell. That should be a lot of fun. Finally, Sustainable Solar Energy Talk will be taking place November 4th, 5 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. at the Beatnik Lounge in Joshua Tree. Here's some background information. 350 Joshua Tree invites you to this Buck Talk, which is free at the Beatnik Lounge, 5 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. We'll have tea and some goodies there too. This presentation will answer some of your questions. We look forward to seeing you there. Buck Buckley will discuss how to get free energy from the sun. This Buck Talk will be accompanied by a PowerPoint presentation with a question and answer period at the end. The event is free and donations are appreciated. So that should be really interesting. I know that he's been giving different presentations throughout the Morongo Basin, and it should be great to attend. That's all I have for events, but there are more events happening later in the season, and I'm constantly adding events to my calendar. So again, please go to my website, laurenlofthehighdesert.com, to keep up to date with everything. Also, if there's an event that you feel I do not have in my calendar that covers my personal agenda, I have an agenda of covering anything that relates to developmental information in the area, anything that relates to renewable energy, water regulations, pressing issues, then please let me know about those events, and I really appreciate it. Here are some recent events that I attended in the area. And let me see, I'll start off just in chronological order. I did attend the Morongo Basin MAC meeting on Monday, October 12, 2015. This took place at the Joshua Tree Community Center in Joshua Tree. This is always fun to attend. I love the MAC meetings because they bring in presenters that touch pressing issues about what's happening in the Morongo Basin, things that will impact this area in the future. And so this is really important to be aware of for people who are planning to live here for an extended period of time and people who visit the area, because it will change as time goes on. I've seen that happen greatly in the Coachella Valley. So at this meeting, the primary speakers, there were actually two presentations that were given. It was a pretty long meeting, but the first presenter was, the first presentation kicked off with Kirby Brill, Mojave Water Agency General Manager, and he discussed the state mandated restrictions and state water control board. He pointed out that California has met its goal of reducing water usage by 27%. And this was interesting to learn. The Joshua Basin Water District exceeded its water reduction goal by 0.5%. So the reduction goal here was 28%, but it's actually, at this point in time, been reduced by 28.5%. And so to give some more information about this presentation, I have to be very honest with you. I am uneducated about the state-mandated restrictions and the State Water Control Board. The presentation went over my head. It was a lot of information, and it's something that I've been meaning to sit down and research. But nonetheless, it was a really interesting presentation. And he discussed more of the broader scope of water development, water infrastructure development happening in the future, and really how that's going to impact the Morongo Basin. So good things to keep in mind. Here are a few points that I did take away from his presentation. The Bay Delta Conservation District moves water from Northern California to a delta, which is located in Northern California. And moving water to this delta puts pressure on water and the delta. There is a California water fix alternative. A big issue is water storage here in Southern California. He was saying that there are different departments and different organizations controlling water. He mentioned that the Metropolitan Water District, which are the big guys, quote unquote, they have more surface storage for water, such as Diamond Valley Lake, which is close to Hemet, or I think it might be in Hemet. So other water entities have less storage area. So he mentioned that was an issue. Division of Drinking Water is another organization that's popped up as of recent that is playing a critical role in water dispersal and water cleaning, which actually they later give a presentation. He mentioned San Diego wants to add highly treated wastewater to drinking water supplies. That was what I took from his presentation. Again, it was relatively advanced, I felt, and so I'm hoping to take some time and sit down with the information he presented, if I could get my hands on the PowerPoint and kind of gain some more understanding of what this Bay Delta Conservation Project is, as that was something he presented. So the next presentation was given by the Division of Drinking Water, and the speakers were Sean McCarthy, who is district engineer for the division, as well as Jeff O'Keefe, who is Region 5 chief engineer for the division. The specific topic was chromium being detected in local water supply. And what was interesting was the big question was about chromium, was how did chromium come to be in the local water supplies? They mentioned that chromium can be introduced in various methods. One of the methods is it can be naturally introduced, which is apparently the case here in the Morongo Basin, is that chromium has appeared by natural cause. It was said that chromium was used as a corrosion inhibitor at PG&E Hinkley. It can also be found in natural deposits, again, which is the case here in the Morongo Basin. Currently, chromium levels are low enough to meet state requirements, and alternative drinking water is not needed. Initial sampling began on this in January 2015. The public notice is required every 6 months. The notice includes chromium levels, the status of the plan to fix it, and where you can obtain alternative water. There is preparation for compliance plans at this point in time to deal with the issue. Samples from certain areas cover large space, so there's no need to test water from specific wells. I mentioned that because someone at the MAC meeting raised his hand and he said, where can he go to test his water specifically? And I did not get where you can take your water to have it tested, but it was mentioned that when samples are taken of the aquifers here, that it covers a substantial area. So it's not like every single person with a well has to test their well water, because the sample covers a certain circumference, and that sample will represent your well wherever you're located. So I thought that was really interesting. And so the main point here is that, again, the chromium levels are low enough that the drinking water is considered to be safe according to state requirements. And it was brought up, too, about drinking water. This is an interesting topic some of you are probably more knowledgeable of, but the topic of regulation of bottled water is also also quite an issue because someone at the MAC meeting did bring up, well, what are the regulations of drinking water in comparison to the regulations of our local water district? So again, that presentation was given by the Division of Drinking Water. If you would like to know more about this issue, then you can go to waterboards.ca.gov/drinkingwater. The link is available on my website. You go to the news section and you find the MAC meeting article, and it should give you more information. They do have specific reports of the sampling that has been conducted at this point in time, and they have more information about how chromium has come into the area or has been introduced. So that's good to know. And something else that was funny at the MAC meeting was someone raised their hand and she asked, what is the next contaminant you are concerned with? Because contamination is a constant ongoing process here in the basin, all over the place, really. There's constantly something being found in water supplies that are of a concern. They did have a chemical that they said they were, or a pollutant that they're concerned about. It's not a big issue at this point in time. I didn't get the name of it, but it is kind of an ongoing process with pollution in the area. Again, that was the Morongo Basin Municipal Advisory Committee meeting, or the MAC meeting, one of my favorite meetings to attend in the area. The other big event that I attended that has gotten a lot of coverage as of recent was the Monument Proposal Public Meeting that took place at the Whitewater Preserve in Whitewater, California, not too far from here. And my particular coverage of this event deals more with the experience of going to this meeting and what was generally said at the meeting. I haven't been keeping up with the specific political process that's involved with the monument proposal. It has been an ongoing process for some time now. So I will just let you know what it was like to attend this meeting and what I've generally learned. This is something new to me. I have never been to a meeting like this. I've never personally been involved with monument proposals or public land proposals like this, so it was really interesting to attend. I did take a bus from Yucca Valley. There was bus rides provided. I was told that there were two buses provided from the Campaign for the California Desert, which is a coalition of conservation groups in the area from all over the place. They did provide two buses from Yucca Valley, a large bus and then a smaller bus, to go to the meeting. And then there was also a bus provided by the Mojave Desert Land Trust. So there was quite a bit of representation from the Morongo Basin at this meeting, and the bus that I was on was packed. It was amazing. There were all kinds of people who attended. The bus ride was free, which is really nice. We left at 12 p.m. or around 12:30. And while we were on the way to the bus, there was actually a speaker from the coalition who was on the bus with us, and she handed out an pamphlet with information, and she just prepared us for the meeting, what to expect, what is it going to be like, a couple talking points. So this was really interesting because it was just really well organized. Again, a ride was provided, a speaker was there to give information. Eventually, we did get to the meeting. There was a check-in table. They did give us comment cards so that we could fill them out, say what our stance was, and if we have any comments about the proposal. And I was surprised that there was actually food provided at the event, quite a bit of food, finger foods, but still it was free. There were cookies and beverages. There was a huge tent with all kinds of chairs facing towards an elevated stage, and the whole tent was packed. It was packed full of people attending this event. And so eventually the speakers start sitting down at the elevated stage, and Senator Feinstein, she was the guest speaker. Everyone just started clapping, going crazy when she started nearing the stage. And so she started off the event by presenting the history of the monument proposal, which this is actually interesting to me because I haven't been keeping up with monument proposals like this all my life. So She did mention that she's actually been a supporter of conservation for a long time, and that these proposals actually date all the way back to the 1994 California Desert Protection Act. And it's actually been introduced ever since 1994, the monument proposals. I don't have the specific dates, but again, what I took home from it was that this has been an ongoing process for her and other people who support this or these monument proposals. It's not something new that just came out of the blue. It's these areas have been proposed for conservation initiatives for a long time. And what else to take home about this meeting? That was a big thing. And she did have different speakers there. I don't have all their names on hand, but what was interesting to observe was Paul Cook, which is Paul Cook was not there at the meeting. He actually had someone speak in place for him. I don't have the specific name on hand, but Paul Cook was not present, and Paul Cook was the only speaker there who proposed or who opposed the bill that Senator Feinstein has presented. So if you would like to know more about Paul Cook, he actually has his own bill, then you should look into that if you're interested to know. It is different from Senator Feinstein's bill. Finally, public speaking opened, and a lot of people were very anxious to get up and say their opinions about this issue. The crowd was actually really responsive throughout the entire event. There were conservationists and there were miners as well as off-roaders. And the crowd would applaud, the crowd would boo when someone said something they didn't like. So it was, again, very responsive audience. There were so many people who wanted to speak that each speaker was only given a minute to speak, which is a very short period of time. But again, there was speakers from all kinds of major groups. There was a representative from an official off-roading group who was there. There were speakers from official mining groups and mining companies, as well as conservationists. There was a speaker from the Sierra Club. There was a speaker from the Joshua Tree Chamber, as well as the Palm Springs Tourism Bureau. So again, we saw this wide range of perspectives coming from conservationists, coming from miners and off-roaders. We all got on the bus and left, and it was a pretty involved meeting. I have some more photos. I have some photos and coverage of this event on my website, laurenlofthehighdesert.com. That's all I have at this point in time about local meetings and local information. So really quick, I just wanted to go over some local news that I have come across. And I know that recently we had some really huge thunderstorms that came through here and lightning storms. And so I did read on Z1077.com that there were actually strikes in 29 Palms that caused three fires, just so you know, but it was well handled by the fire department, thankfully. And nothing serious happened. Some more information. Tours are being provided by Joshua Basin Water District. And I heard about this actually through Mark Lundquist, who is the head of the MAC group in Joshua Tree. So here's some story, or here's some news coming from the High Desert Star. Tour offers inside look how Joshua Tree gets and treats water. The Joshua Basin Water District gave the first of three tours showing off facilities to a select group from the community Tuesday. The Mojave Water Agency awarded a grant to the water district to allow them to give three facility tours. The tour included stops at the field shop, the Mojave Water Agency turnout connection vault, the recharge basin, and package treatment plan. Participants also stopped at Well 16 to discuss chromium 6 levels and a pilot study district officials are pursuing. The goal is to show community members what the water district does behind the scenes. Among those in attendance were representatives from the Joshua Tree National Park Association, Morongo Unified School District, and Joshua Basin Water District Citizens Advisory Committee and Board of Directors. So some more information about this tour if you would like to know. The second tour will be held from 9 a.m. to noon, November 5th at the Joshua Basin Water District head office. So it's good to call them so that you make sure that you have your space there. And here is a final story coming from the High Desert Star, published on October 14, 2015. The title is Homesteading Author Promotes New Novel. A novelist who grew up on a homestead in Pioneer Town will return to the area to preview her newest book this weekend. Susan Ling's mother staked a 160-acre claim in an isolated area 8 miles west of Pioneer Town just after 1930. Unlike most other women at the time, she homesteaded by herself rather than as someone's wife. When she left for Hollywood to live with her new husband in the late 30s, her heart remained in Pipes Canyon. After I was born in 1941, we spent every spring, summer, and fall living on the claim in a large army tent while my father worked in the city and drove out every few weeks to bring us supplies, said Lang. When I was 3 years old, we all moved back to the canyon full-time. Life on the claim was never easy. The family lived in this tent for 2 years while another one-room structure was built, later joined by a small kitchen. Water had to be hauled from a spring on a mountain until it could be piped out to the cabin, and they never had electricity. The family cooked food on a campfire or small wooden stove in the yard, and Lang was taught to forage and hunt to live off the land. For her first 3 years of education, Lang attended a one-room schoolhouse in Pioneer Town, where her father found work aging the new buildings constructed by Hollywood to simulate a frontier town. She watched television and movies being filmed long before she understood what they were. Lang knew the real stories of the area and what it was truly like to live there, and the place was still wild. Lang's mother and her friends had many tales to tell from their homestead days, and she remembered listening to them as a child. I learned a lot about point of view that way. Hearing the same story told in different ways, depending on who was doing the telling, Lang said. It was these stories that finally germinated into her first book, Small Rocks Rising, Juniper Blue, and Moon Lily, a trilogy of fiction works. Perhaps best known as Wildfires in the Summer of 2006, the Sawtooth Complex is both the setting and title for Susan Ling's latest novel, dedicated to her brother, Danny Saul, who lives in Pioneer Town. He still lives there with his wife, Claudia, and their daughter, April, and to others who fight for the land. Susan Lang has given presentations in the Morongo Basin as of recent about her book. I thought this would be interesting to those of you who are listening because, again, history, in my view, it's a big part of appreciating the Morongo Basin. It's a big part of my broadcast, hearing stories of how people lived and how did we become the community that we are today and what shaped this area. That's really critical to know. So this was really interesting to hear about Susan Lang and to hear about the history of living in this area. That's all I have for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the broadcast. You can always learn more by going to laurenlofthehighdesert.com. Again, where I post events, I post articles. I even post opinion articles from time to time. I did post one recently about effective online communication. You are welcome to leave comments and you are welcome to email me and let me know, again, if there are any events in the area that you feel I should cover or if there's a particular subject that you feel is worthy on my website. Thank you so much and have a great weekend.